Hi everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer. Hello everyone, and welcome back to Pixels. My name is Patrick Beja, and this is a show where we cover the gaming news for the past couple of weeks. We cover the news and the games that have been coming out, and we try to put a slight analysis spin to it so we can navigate the treacherous waters of the video games industry. And today I have a first timer on the show. Very glad to welcome Kate Gray. How are you doing, Kate?
Hi, I'm good. Thank you.
Thanks for being on. So since this is your first time, we could say a few words about what you do. You're independent game journalist from the UK, and you write for a number of publications. can you say a few words about yourself?
Yeah, sure. So as you said, I'm a games journalist. So that's what I do for my job. In my spare time, I've started making games. I make Twitter bots, which is always fun. And I do a podcast called Toku Podcast. So all about video games and other things.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for being on. We have a number of topics to discuss today. The first one is going to be the Switch again, which I don't like talking about the same thing several shows in a row, but when Nintendo comes out with a new console, that is obviously a big topic. So it's no surprise we're going to be talking about it pretty much incessantly until it comes out, which is only a month away. Holy crap. we also have the ZeniMax Oculus trial that has been resolved. We have Resident Evil 7, which just came out, but both of us are too big of wusses to actually play it. So we're going to have a few things to talk about there. And a bunch of other news. But let's start with Nintendo and the news about the Switch. So let me cover all of these bits, and then I'll ask you your opinion about the Switch in general as well, which I think is always good to get, you know, more takes on that console. But first, Kimishima, during the an interview with Nikkei, which is a Japanese economics newspaper, mentioned that the price of the online service will be relatively low, and that's probably a good thing because we were not super hyped about having to pay another for yet another service for gaming. And it's going to be around 2,000 to 3,000 yen, which is, let's say, around $20 to $25. So I wouldn't be surprised if it was rounded up to 30 euros here in Europe, but we'll see. And you know, euros are that currency that you're not very fond of in the UK, so I don't know how much it is in pounds.
Me either.
It's probably about the same. They're pledging that they're going to keep making Nintendo 3DS games, which I have questions about. And then he's saying the most controversial statement is that they're hoping to sell as many Switch consoles as the Wii, more or less. And if you remember, the Wii is their most successful console ever. It was by leaps and bounds more successful than any, you know, console at the time. It sold over 100 million units in the end. That's a super bold statement. And I understand optimism and you want to, you know, be a cheerleader for your products, but that it seems to me more like denial of reality than like a bold prediction. But I don't know. What's your take on all of those, and then, you know, on the Switch in general?
Well, I mean, the first thing I'm thinking is that if they're still making 3DS games, that's interesting. I think the 3DS is probably my favorite console of all time, so I'd like to see them still support it. But at the same time, if they make everything that comes to 3DS from now on also a Switch game, then I would be very, very tempted to get a Switch. At the moment, I'm not. Which, you know, did everybody buy a Wii at launch? Probably not. So I don't think it's going to sell as many consoles as the Wii, for sure. Like, of course it's not. I can see that they're going really hard on that, you know, by making all the adverts be like, oh, look, normal people playing video games at parties like normal people do and not like, in their bedroom.
how does that even, I mean, this is ridiculous, right? People bringing their Wii at parties and playing like 1-2 Switch while the music is going on in the background and people are drinking beer. That doesn't, it's dumb, right? It's not just
me. Yeah. It's a little bit, I don't know, condescending, maybe. The idea that, like, people can't enjoy games in a traditional way, you know, like, in their bedroom, just, like, wearing pants.
I don't know. The way I enjoy video games is without wearing pants. I'm just, that might be just me, but, yeah. No, but I agree. It is condescending.
Yeah. I mean, I know why they're doing it. They're trying to copy Xbox and PlayStation, but they're not. I don't really think they're understanding. Like, Xbox and PlayStation are still marketing towards their core audience, I would say. Like, the fact that Nintendo are going, yeah, you can take it to parties, you can play it under a bridge. Like, no one does that. No one does that. Even with, like, the consoles you can already, like, carry around. Like, no one is playing PS Vita under a railway bridge. Like, no.
Well, that's because no one is playing PS Vita, period. That might be why. But I own one. I have the right to say it because I own one and I love it. But yeah, okay. I don't know. I mean, maybe let's be a cheerleader for the Switch here. Maybe, you know, no one is going to go and play it at parties and like in those situations. But the fact that you can bring it with you and split the controllers means that you might play it in the train or, you know, you just happen to have it during a picnic and for an hour during that 4 hours picnic, you just pull it out and start playing with your friends for a little while. I don't know. I don't think that's going to be I think the main thing is that this is not going to be the focus, I don't think, of the way people play it. But other people are already going to buy it anyway, I think. The people who love Nintendo games are already going to buy it. But I'm curious, you as someone who loves your 3DS, why aren't you interested in that one? It's going to be a better version of that, kind of, isn't it?
Well, only if Nintendo supports it, right? Now that they're going for like the same audience as they went for with the Wii, which is a more sort of casual, not in a bad way, but you know, people who don't want to play the latest Ubisoft game or whatever, people who aren't interested in online multiplayer. I wonder if they're going to start making games more like what they did with the Wii, where it was like Wii Music and Wii Fit, and I'm not interested in those games. So if they, for me, what would bring me to the Switch is if they put a bunch of games on there that they have on the 3DS, so things like Fire Emblem, Animal Crossing, Pokemon, things that are great on handhelds. If they could get like a Persona on there, that would be great. More stuff like the Vita. That would be like really, really cool. And then on top of that, the sort of large games that you normally only get in a home console. So, you know, your Zeldas and, oh God, what else? I'm not that interested in the Mario game, to be honest. But
What?
Oh, I just think it looks a bit eh.
Oh, so it's not Mario games in general. It's just this one specifically.
You're not a Mario fan.
Okay, all right. My heart is bleeding a little bit right now, but I get it. But so you're not impressed by the things we've seen announced on the Switch at this point, like Zelda, Splatoon, Mario Kart, Mario Odyssey. That's not rocking your boat.
Mario Kart's just, I've already played it. It's a good game,
15
but
times.
It came out like 2 years ago. There's not that much.
So do you have a Wii U?
I do, yeah.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. I mean, I used to work for Nintendo magazine. I had to have a Wii U.
I love the caveat there. So you had to have one. Mine was a gift. I enjoyed it thoroughly, but yeah, it was a gift. Okay, it was a gift actually by my ex Blizzard coworkers. So there you go, gaming industry for the win. What about the online service though? It's going to be free until probably the fall, and then let's say roughly £20 a year. Would that be, I don't know, that doesn't, I mean, it's kind of, for me, well, maybe I'm going to pay for it, but reluctantly, and because it's cheaper, but it's not like I'm, oh, yay, it's cheaper, and they include fun things with it, so I'm going to be paying it gladly. It's like, ugh. Fine, whatever, probably. You know, it's not generating a lot of love for me. I don't know about are you seduced by the free NES or SNES game that they're going to rent you for a month and then take away?
No, not at all. If it was like Xbox Gold or PS Plus, where the games every month were really good.
You keep, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going to buy the online service for multiplayer, because like I don't play online multiplayer Nintendo games. There aren't that many. Like it's like Mario Kart and I don't know. Well, they've got rid of Miiverse. Splatoon, yeah. I'm not going to get it for that, and the games aren't enticing enough. So I guess I'm just not going to get it. A bit weird.
Well, yeah. Let's, you know what, by the end of the year, as we've said multiple times, maybe we'll have changed our tune. We'll see.
Yeah, I hope so.
They also reported over $500 million profit for Pokemon games, and that includes Pokemon Go, which by some analysts, estimations has grossed over $1 billion. So you have to remember Pokemon Go is developed by Niantic, which for the Pokemon company, of which Nintendo only owns a third. So it's not like, you know, it's all in their pocket, but still. And then they have 5% of the 78 million people who downloaded Mario Run who paid the $10 for the full game. So 5% of 78, that's what, 4 million roughly. So $40 million, a little bit under that. That's not bad. It's certainly not the kind of money that the free-to-play games are making, the successful free-to-play games are making on iOS and Android. But 40 million just on iOS, that's not a bad payday. I'm guessing the game didn't cost 40 million to make, so I don't know. It's okay. No, you don't seem impressed. Did you buy it?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
Are you gonna be going back? I can see, you know, I can feel the enthusiasm in your voice. Are you gonna go back to it for the easy mode update that they just added?
No, I feel like I'm coming across really negative about games. I just like I have very little free time to play games, so I kind of just want to keep like moving and keep playing new stuff. I'm so far behind. Yeah,
that's fair enough. Well, we'll talk about Fire Emblem Heroes in just a little bit, but before that, the ZeniMax Oculus trial has already been concluded, and that was the conclusion was ZeniMax is going to get a lot of money from Oculus/Facebook. Basically, it is $500 million awarded for a number of different issues, but the main one is breach of NDA, and the consequence might be that ZeniMax is saying that they might seek an injunction to halt the sales of the Oculus Rift. And Carmack, which is, you know, he's the guy who was, everyone knows Carmack, right? John Carmack. And he was contesting the result and saying that he didn't do the things they concluded he did. And it's a kind of a mess, but I don't know. I'm guessing that Oculus is going to go for an appeal. At the same time, they probably don't want to drag this out for too long. But kind of a little bit unexpected that ZeniMax is getting that much money for it. I don't know exactly where the truth lies in all of that very complicated trial. But the one thing I'm taking away from it is if ZeniMax wants to halt the sales of the Rift, that's going to be a huge hit. And I'm guessing Facebook might pay more to make ZeniMax go away completely. But that was a little bit unexpected.
Yeah.
Do you see this as, I don't know, ZeniMax, like, looking for an easy payday? Or do you think they have grounds for their complaints?
God, I don't know. I mean, it wasn't something that I had much of an eye on because, to be honest, I don't really care that much about either company. So it kind of just seems like...
You're not
like,
a VR fan?
I can't afford VR at the moment. And if I could, like, I don't really think there's that much going on in it. I got to play PSVR for like a whole day and I had a great time with it. But the idea of spending like £300 to £700 on something that I would use less than a console is like mad. I can't do that. Like I have other things that I need to buy more urgently than
like a Nintendo Switch. No, okay.
I guess. I mean, I'm going to be in America when it comes out, so it might be a bit cheaper. But also then I'd have to like take it around with me in my suitcase, and maybe that would be quite fun actually, because then I could play it like when I'm wandering around America, exactly. Going to all the parties, and, right?
Yes, and when you get back on the plane, you can play it there too. I bought my PlayStation 4 in the US and it was fine. I took it like the actual box on the plane and that was fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. Okay. Well, I mean, that sounds fun. I was going to take my 3DS with me anyway.
Well, you can have both. As Nintendo is saying, they're going to keep supporting the 3DS. So they're both working together. right. But so the ZeniMax trial, it was definitely a surprise that they won that much, at least for me.
Yeah.
But we'll see. If they do go for an injunction against the sale of the Rift, that's going to be a much bigger deal than just, you know, winning the trial. But we'll see. These kinds of things take forever.
Yes.
Talking about VR, let's move on to Resident Evil 7, which, as I mentioned during the beginning of the show, I personally was interested in, but at the same time, I'm kind of over the super scary stuff that includes movies and games. And Resident Evil 7 is definitely freaking scary. And I did try the demo. I figured, you know, I can try the demo, the new one that just came out, before I decide whether or not I want to buy the game. And there is a VR mode, and it's... I'll say a few words about it in a minute. But so you're just as scared of it. This isn't, you know, a review show. It's not like we expect everyone to review the games we try. This is just a quick impressions. But you did play with it just a little bit and watch someone play, which I think is fair for Resident Evil. What are your impressions on this?
So Resident Evil is one of those series that I kind of missed when I was younger, which is probably fair because it's very scary and I don't tend to play scary games because I'm a wuss. But I kind of wanted to see, like, everyone was saying it was really good. So I went around to my friend's house and she was playing it. And so I watched her play a bit of it, and it was great because there was another one of my friends there, and they'd kind of got this whole tactic down, and so they were kind of just like yelling at each other all their different tactics. And I was like, well, this is one way to experience the game, I guess. And I was hiding behind a pillow the whole time, even when like nothing scary was happening, because they were so like hyped up about the scary moments. They were like screaming even though nothing was there. They were very freaked out about there's a grandma character. She's like sitting in a wheelchair and she can't like move or talk or anything. She looks lifeless, which, you know, in a scary game, you know, at some point she's probably gonna like stand up and like attack you. But the thing that really freaked them out was that her wheelchair kept just like moving, I guess, of its own accord. Like they'd go around the corner and she'd be there and they'd be like, ah, and then they'd swear and I'd be like, ah. And the fact that they were like so tense about like just a woman in a wheelchair just appearing made me feel really tense, and I was already really tense, so yeah, it was terrifying.
I think I think this is a testament to how much of its goal this game is achieving. You know, yeah. These kinds of moments where it's a cheap scare, but still you expect someone to be at some point, you know, in some location in the house, and all of a sudden you turn around and where there was nothing, there mm-hmm. they are. I understand it's cheap, but it's a huge departure for Resident Evil that had gone so much in the action aspect of the game that it sort of lost almost its scary qualities, at least in the past few games. And in this one, it definitely works. It's very different from the other Resident Evils, but it works to the point that, you know, even playing the demo, I was like, I don't think I want to play that game. I don't know how much of a, you know, positive impression that is, but it's like, it's too scary. And I don't want to inflict negative emotions on myself. I think
yeah.
age might have something to do with it. I was much less concerned with these things when I was younger. And it just works. It's creepy. It's really scary. And I've tried the VR version of that. And there are two elements to this for me. First of all, it is even more scary. As I've said, those games that manage to put you in a place well, like Batman, you know, Arkham VR, and well, this one, really amplify whatever feeling you're having of presence. And in this one, it does work. However, the control scheme didn't really work for me all that well. The way they do it is that you can move around as you do in a regular first-person game, but when you turn, in 30-degrees increments. So when you go left or right, it's just going to snap 30 degrees left or right. And the reason is it minimizes movement. Motion sickness, if you do it like that. So that kind of, I understand why they're doing it, but I was still, you know, sometimes I was looking in a way that looking slightly to the side to where I wanted to go. So the motion sickness was still in here. Maybe I would have gotten used to it, but after about like 10, 15 minutes, I was like, okay, I can't, you know, I feel like I'm going to puke. So, so I didn't keep between that and the fact that it was even more scary. I stopped it, but I think it achieves what it's setting out to do, which is kind of an accomplishment for this game, which I think many people were not super hyped about, sort of maybe doubtful about. So, yeah, it seems at least that it's working out. And then it seems like there is a lot of the traditional Resident Evil, you know, not even, I don't want to say puzzle mechanics, but like find some jewel that you have to place somewhere, or a key that you use to open something that makes allows you to go a little bit farther that way, and then you find something that you go back with, and you know, these kinds of gameplay mechanics of exploration almost. But yeah, so Resident Evil doesn't seem bad, and according to both of us, it is freaking scary. So there you go.
Yes.
Fire Emblem Heroes, you downloaded it and then uninstalled it immediately. I'm really curious to know why.
So I know that it's a game that has kind of the gacha aspect of like randomness. So I played Fire Emblem Awakening, so I know all the characters and I care about the characters, and I know that if I played it, I would just be like, I'd just be trying to get the characters that I want. And I don't know, I really like mobile games. And I think there are so many mobile games out there that reward you for playing rather than just sort of like coyly hide the things you want to make you play longer. I don't know. I still need to get around to playing the latest Fire Emblem game, Fates?
Yeah.
And I think I would have a better experience with that. I might get round to playing Fire Emblem Heroes, but at the moment, my phone's all full up of like photos and games and music. And yeah, so yeah, for now, I'm just keeping to the games I already have. The games that are sort of, I guess, that don't require quite as much involvement. That sounds really stupid, but like when I'm on transport and I'm playing mobile games, it tends to be that I just want something to distract me a little bit.
So what do you play in those situations?
So my main mobile game that I've had for at least 3 years is Threes.
Oh, wow. Okay. These kinds of games. I see.
Yeah. Like sometimes a bit more complicated. Like I had Sorcery for a while. But if I was playing Sorcery on a train, I would usually miss my stop and then be like, oh, no. And that's the kind of thing I mean. I just downloaded Dandy Dungeon, which is really interesting. But I don't think it's a game I can recommend to everyone, purely because it's so involved in the game dev process. Like the jokes that come out of it are based on kind of understanding game development. So it's not a game that's going to appeal to most people, but right. It is really, really good.
Good. Yeah, I understand your feelings towards Fire Emblem Heroes, especially if you're a fan of the original game and you always have your 3D, or, you know, you love your 3DS. It definitely feels like it's not the worst example of the free-to-play genre, but it certainly is in that category. And I think it's good that Nintendo is going with a pay-to-play model for Mario, which has huge appeal. And so from a financial standpoint, they're going to, you know, a lot of people are going to give it a try anyway and might be willing to pay a little bit of money to play it. Whereas Fire Emblem Heroes, if you're talking to a crowd of, smartphone users, they're probably not going to have heard of it, so they might not even want to download it if they know that you need to pay for it. If you need to pay for it to play it in the long run, but they might be willing to if it's a free-to-play game. So I commend Nintendo for trying to, you know, different business models and adapting the business model to the game and the audience for that game on smartphone. I think it would have been misguided. Well, I don't know. I would have preferred it if you just paid for it and that was it. But I think it wouldn't have achieved the best financial result, I'm guessing.
Yeah. But
that being said, the game is pretty good. It feels like a faithful rendition of what Fire Emblem is, adapted to the the medium of the smartphone. And I don't know how much, I guess it will rest, I haven't played it a ton, I've played it a little bit, and it will rest on how much, you know, if it's, whether or not it's pay to win. Like if you have a chance to get the character you like and that character is fun because you know them, I think it's fine. If the characters that are rare are super powerful and allow you to go through missions that you wouldn't really have been able to go through if you only have regular characters, then I have a problem with it. Maybe it's a little bit too early to decide that yet, but that is my concern there. And but the mechanics of it, for the first few missions I've played, for someone like me who doesn't really like the complexity of Fire Emblem, it seems like the beginning at least is simple enough that I'm like, oh, all right, you know, the blue beats green and green beats red and red beats blue, and that's fine. Oh, and the flyers, they are at a disadvantage against the bow people, the bowmen, the arrow, the guys that use arrows. So, I mean, that it felt like a decent introduction into that universe. So I wonder, I'm going to try it a little bit more.
Okay.
So that's my impression on that thing. So there you go. All right, the series of announcements for future games. First of all, Tekken 7, as I said, I'm a huge fan of the series, and we were sort of thinking it might not come out at the beginning of the year as they had initially promised, but it's been confirmed for June 2nd, and there were a couple of mentions around this. First of all, Harada, Katsuhiro Harada, the producer, mentioned that they didn't want the game to come out broken like some other games did, some other fighting games did, which is, yeah, that's kind of a shot across the bow of Street Fighter V, which is weird because they are good friends, you know, the producers of both of those. Yoshiori Ono and Katsuhiro Harada are good friends, and they, you know, there's Akuma coming to Tekken and stuff like that. But anyway, it was fair. So maybe it was in you know, a little bit of poking to his friend. They did mention all of the classic characters are going to be available for free, and you might get, that implies you might get some different characters available for pay, but the roster is pretty big already, and you get a narcoleptic vampire if you pre-order the game. I don't see why you wouldn't do it. And what else? Yeah, it's just, you know, the trailer, I don't know, if you haven't seen it, go and check it out, because it is the core essence of what Tekken is, by which I mean you have a scene, like a nostalgic scene of Heihachi training his son Kazuya, who's still a kid, and Kazuya is trying, you know, to punch him, and he's like obviously way too small to do anything to his dad, and so he punches him three times, and then Kazuya gets annoyed and kicks him in the face in the most brutal child abuse way you can imagine. And if you know anything about that, well, it's not that brutal. It's just comic-y, comic brutal. Okay. And if you, yeah, it's not like he's bleeding and on the floor or something. No, it's more like the good spirited humor of that series, where you know that, you know, later in the story, Kazuya throws him in like a canyon, and then Heihachi didn't die but survives and comes back and throws him in the volcano, and it's like, it's this ridiculous, over the top, cheesy spirit that they've developed over the years that seems very present in this game still. And as we've said many times, Tekken is, you know, the most successful gaming fighting franchise in the world. And it looks like Tekken 7 is gearing up to be a pretty good one as well, with some sides of single player enjoyment as well, maybe in the way that Mortal Kombat or Injustice managed to do, which Street Fighter or even King of Fighters don't achieve. So I'm definitely looking forward to it, and I might just, for kicks, make the illustration of this episode Tekken related. It's just, you know, just for me. I'm doing me for now. So yeah, Tekken. I'm guessing you were saying you're not a big fighting game fan.
Yeah, I tried to get into it. I did a stream the other day with, I think, the second best Street Fighter V player in the UK. Okay. And I was like, well, if anyone can teach me how to enjoy this game, it's going to be this guy. But I don't think he was interested in making me like the game.
Did he just obviously beat you over and
yeah.
over?
Yeah. He wasn't letting me win, which is good. Like, that's fine. I think I won a couple of matches against the other guy on the stream. But he probably let me win. I don't know.
But you know, that's not, so there are a couple of things here, and I think a lot of people are in your situation, that they've never been into fighting games, and maybe they're looking at it because there's a little bit of a resurgence there. First of all, playing against someone that's 10 times stronger, better than you is not, especially if they're not teaching you, if they're just beating you, that's not going to be fun, obviously. So probably it's easier or better to play with someone who's either at your level or, you know, trying to teach you how it goes. But even that, I wouldn't say, you know, for the introduction, they're going to try and teach you like all the intricacies of the gameplay, which is infinitely complex. And that's not going to be fun.
No.
So play with someone who's just as bad as you is the way to go, I think. But on Tekken specifically, the really fun thing is that even if you're a newcomer, unlike in the 2D games like Street Fighter or King of Fighters or many others, You can do fun things by just mashing the buttons. And that's how everyone starts. Initially, you're just mashing the buttons, trying out, you know, the same cheesy technique over and over again because you found that one kick, which is really cool. And Tekken has that in a way that many other games don't. You find the goofy character you like, and you find the different, you know, moves that you enjoy, and you do them over and over again, and your friends get super annoyed because unless they specifically know how to counter them, they're going to get, you know, beaten by it as much as they're going to be able to beat you. So I think Tekken really has a potential for being the game that people like you can enjoy in that fighting game genre. So I would really encourage you to try it out when it comes out.
Okay.
You'll come back and let me know what you think about it. Just, you know, get a few friends who've never played the game, get, you know, some pizza and unhealthy food and drinks, and just sit down for a couple of hours, play that game. I'm sure you're going to have a good time. That's exactly the type of setting you should enjoy that game with.
Yeah.
All right. Warner Brothers have announced that they will announce a game on March 8th. And I don't usually cover these kinds of teasers. I think they're, you know, clickbaity and whatever. But in this case, I'm really intrigued because, so it's going to be March 8th, as I said, it's more than a month away, but still the graphics of the teaser are sort of implying that we're guessing it's going to be either a new Batman game or Shadow of Mordor 2, which I can't wait for. Do you have a theory about what it could be?
No, I'd be excited about Shadow of Mordor 2.
Oh, are you part of the crowd that liked it like me, the first one?
I liked its ideas, let's say that. I think it has the potential to be either a really good Lord of the Rings game, of which I don't think there are that many, mm-hmm. or just to, like, the mechanic of the Nemesis system has really interesting potential. And if they made an RPG that I actually enjoyed, then it would be really good. Like, imagine the Nemesis system in something like Dragon Age. That'd be great.
Oh, but that's not what I want. I want Shadow of Mordor with a better Nemesis system. Like, it's very action-y. Sure, it could be taken again in another game, but I don't want Shadow of Mordor to all of a sudden become an RPG.
Mm.
I don't think it's going to, but... Okay, but I see. It was... Yeah, it had its flaws. I will admit that. What about Batman? We had Arkham Knight a year ago or so. I think it's too early for a new Arkham game from Warner Bros. Right, Warner Brothers.
If they're gonna make a good one, then yeah, I'd like to see them put a couple more years into it. I guess I liked the last one. It had some flaws, but generally it was quite nice. It felt sort of weighty, and the combat was, I think, maybe overcomplicated for me, but I don't know. I'm not super into fancy combat like Batman has.
So that's why you didn't like Shadow of Mordor, because it's basically the same system. I love it.
I tend to prefer sort of old school combat generally, where it's like, you know, swords, and I was going to say shields, but I don't use a shield ever. If you're using a shield, you're not hitting them hard enough. So. Generally my approach. Maybe like a medieval Batman. That'd be great, wouldn't it?
Ooh.
Yeah. Batman with swords. Well, oh, wait, no, he doesn't kill people.
Well, that's Shadow of Mordor. What are you talking about? That's what it is. Shadow of Mordor is basically medieval Batman.
Oh, yeah. I guess.
You need to take another look at that game.
I didn't play it very long.
No, but if you don't like Batman, there's no way you're going to like the Shadow of Mordor system, because the moment-to-moment gameplay is still very much that same combat system.
Yeah.
But yeah, so anyway, I think it's too early for Batman, and I really hope it's Shadow of Mordor 2, which I've been clamoring for a few months or maybe a couple of years now. But we'll see. We'll see. Maybe it's going to be something entirely different, but I didn't want to mention it. There's a new Need for Speed game coming soon. That's kind of a whatever for me. BioWare's next series is launching in March 2018, so in a year from now. And it's an entirely new series, which we haven't heard anything about. That really has me intrigued. And, you know, you seem to like RPGs, so I'm guessing you you as well.
Yeah, I love BioWare, so.
So it's an action adventure, not an RPG. And they're saying, you know, all of the big things that people usually say, like the great RPG character development and story progression that BioWare is known for, is what the fans are expecting. And they said they've been working on it since 2012. So there you go.
Okay, that's a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, since 2012, it comes out in 2018. That's 6 years of development. That has to be good, right? That's how it works.
I mean, since 2012, they have released Dragon Age Inquisition. Was Mass Effect 3 that long ago?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Well, it was after 2012, for sure.
Yeah. They've done DLC. They've been working on Mass Effect Andromeda. So I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, they say we've been working on it since 2012, but it's kind of been like, oh, we'll put it aside for a bit because we have to do this instead. So maybe they haven't been like working on it solidly, or maybe they have. I don't know. I'm just guessing anyway. That's a long time to work on anything. I hope it's good.
Yeah. Mass Effect 3 was actually early 2012. I thought it was after that. Okay. Wow. It's been so long. Holy crap. Yeah. It's been 5 years.
Wow. Jeez. Oh, okay. My God.
Mass Effect 3 was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess it is time for something new. The other big news is the announcement that Marvel is going to be working with Square Enix on a multi-game franchise. That is really exciting. I mean, obviously, it's going to be centered around the Avengers. And Square Enix is apparently getting Crystal Dynamics and Eidos Montreal, which, as you know, worked on Tomb Raider, the reboot, and Deus Ex. So that might mean, what I've heard is that Shadow of the Tomb Raider is being taken away from Crystal Dynamics and given to Eidos Montreal to finish. Shadow of the Tomb Raider is the rumored title for the sequel to Shadow of the Tomb Raider. But so that move also means that we're probably not going to see a sequel to Deus Ex, a third episode. And the disappointing sales of that title, Mankind Divided, this year, or last year, I guess, might support that theory. But still, that means Crystal Dynamics and Eidos ultimately are going to be working on a series of games in that, I guess what we can call a Marvel gaming universe, centered around the Avengers that have to reassemble after some kind of catastrophic event. God knows what happened there, but we don't know how linked they're going to be together. We don't know, well, anything really about the games, but the studios are good. Marvel has a very well-oiled machine by now, so I'm hopeful.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be interested to see what kind of game it is, because Square has such a range of games. Like, is it going to be like a Just Cause game? Because that would be weird or cool. I'm not sure. As long as they don't take it too seriously, because I think that's the problem with most superhero games, is that they're like very, very serious. They're like, oh, yeah. You know, there's nothing fun about being a superhero. It's a lot of responsibility. And then, like, I really enjoyed Lego Marvel Superheroes because it didn't do that. It was silly and sweet, but it had moments of seriousness still, and I think that's possible. I'd like to see Square doing something more like that, I think.
Yeah, I mean, certainly what Marvel does is make sure they try and strike the right balance. I mean, everyone has different opinions about their movies, but most people seem to like them. But they strike the right balance between serious and goofy, or serious and fun. I would hope they do the same things in the games, given the success of the movies, I would suspect that they would do that. And for the style of the games, it's, you know, Crystal Dynamics. It would be weird if they made, I mean, maybe the kind of game that Tomb Raider is into a Marvel game, but with some twists. I don't know, but that is what seems to be their expertise. And Eidos did, as we mentioned, the Deus Ex, which could work in a superhero universe as well. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this seems to be in the spirit of what they've been doing at Marvel for video games since in the past couple of years, which is get together, you know, get rid of all of the mediocre players and games and work with serious partners. They've been working with Telltale. We've seen that trailer for the Spider-Man game, which was very exciting, or seemed at least like it was creating something interesting. So yeah, I think I'm cautiously optimistic here. Obviously, we're not going to see anything about this for a very long time. They're not going to be coming out anytime soon. But this is a positive announcement for me. I think it sounds like something that could work out.
Yeah.
EVO 2017, the big fighting game competition, is going to be headlining Street Fighter V, Tekken 7, Super Smash Bros. Wii U, and Super Smash Bros. Melee, the game that never dies, King of Fighters 14, and Injustice 2. So that's going to be exciting. EVO is always super exciting, as you guys all know, because I talk about it every year. And it's always a special moment in the esports season, because fighting games, again, as I often say, have this weird quality where they're very diverse. The fans, the players, the champions, everyone is from everywhere around the world, unlike FPSs or RTSs, which are predominantly Western and Asian. And this is sort of leads us into another discussion, which I don't want to get too deep politically into, but we do have to mention, as you guys know, I do have a political podcast called The Phileas Club. So if you want to talk about that, go listen to that show. I talk about this at length, about, you know, the political aspect. But the ban for the travel ban for the U.S., the hashtag Muslim ban for the U.S. does have implications, direct implications in the games industry. There were implications for GDC, where some people were not allowed to go. Now, this seems to have been cleared out with the dual nationalities and green card holders being allowed to travel again. But still, for things like EVO and stuff like that, some people come from different places. And in general, for the industry as a whole, this idea that immigration is going to be thwarted or be made more difficult does have an impact. And a number of companies and CEOs from gaming companies have expressed that concern, maybe not specifically about this ban, but putting forth the idea that immigration is key to their industry. We've seen statements from Insomniac Games, from Mike Morhaime at Blizzard, and from a few others. Devolver Digital has offered to host games from developers that were blocked from attending GDC because of the travel ban. I don't know what the status is there with the lifting of the restrictions on the dual nationalities and the green card holders and stuff like that. But it's definitely a concern in the industry, and I don't know how much more there is to say about it, but maybe you do have things to say, Kate?
I mean, I'm going to GDC, so...
You don't have dual nationality with one of the banned countries,
don't.
Do you?
Okay. Honestly, I don't tend to talk about politics much, but I am kind of terrified. I've had people say, like, at the border, just like if they ask you your opinion, just don't tell them, which is terrifying. The idea that, like, I'm going to the US, which is like the UK, but bigger in my head, and you know, I have to like lie about my political beliefs or I might get kicked out of the country. That's scary in itself. And the fact that other people might not get in at all, despite the fact they've already maybe paid for their flights, their hotel. If they've got a booth at GDC, they've already paid for that. Like, and then just not being allowed in. I don't know.
I think the concerns are, I mean, as I said, the all of the political aspects of it are discussed in the Phileas Club. So go listen to that if you want. But beyond what is reasonable concern and what is unreasonable concern, mm-hmm. I think this trend that we're seeing in the country, whether you're a citizen of the U.S. or not, I mean, you have the right to choose whatever policy you want to put in place. And certainly that government was voted in on a very clear agenda, even if some people thought they wouldn't go through with it. They said what they were going to do. But looking at it from the outside, I think it is also important, and I'm sure on the inside, it's, you know, as we said, some of the American gaming companies have expressed concern, but the idea that the trend, the perception of the country is going in that way, I think should be noted. And whether or not, you know, you think it's an exaggeration, there might be exaggerations here and there, but the impact on the image of the U.S. is real. And I think that is, you know, you might think, well, F the image, we want to be safe. And that's I understand your reasoning there. And there would be a whole debate to have there about the safety as well. But whether or not you think F the image, we want to be safe, or yeah, this is a concern, the image is being degraded. So I don't know if that, you know, makes sense or not, but that is the way it's starting to look from the outside looking in. So there you go.
Yeah, indeed.
So another political aspect, which is a little bit more positive, Valve and a few game publishers are facing antitrust probe in the EU because of geo-blocking and regional pricing. And that's interesting because I've mentioned a few times, I think on the show, that you get different prices depending where you are in the EU. And for, I don't know how it works when it's a digital product exactly, but you're not supposed to have that. When you're in the EU, you're supposed to have the same market and you know, you're supposed to be able to buy something in another country of the EU without having it being, you know, oh, I will sell it to you at a higher price because you're in that country. Of course, if you sell something in two different countries, you can offer it for a certain price here and for a certain price there. But if someone wants to go to that other country and buy it, you can't prevent them from doing so. So in a digital world, that becomes very complicated because what is the right way of doing it? Do you instate geo-blocking and then say, well, you're not there, but actually you should be able to? Anyway, it's very complicated. The EU is looking into it, but it might result in, down the line, unifying of the price structure on game stores, virtual game stores. And I don't even know if that's a good thing, because that might mean that you get higher prices in countries where people can't really afford to pay those higher prices. So I don't know. That's a tough one, and I'm sure we'll be following it going forward. Did you see that GameStop story on Kotaku about how they're doing their Circle of Life program?
No.
Okay, so let me try and explain it as best I can. Basically, they have always tried to push pre-owned game sales because that they have a much higher margin on those games than on new games. And if I summarize it, basically they now have four categories in which their staff is ranked. They have pre-ordered games, subscription for new games, and reward cards. Buying a used game and it's pre-order game subscription. What am I saying? Pre-orders, reward card subscription, used game sales, and game trade-ins. And they have those four areas, and they should try to achieve a roughly equal number of sales, you know, a gross number on each of those areas. So that means that if they sell too many new games or pre-orders, for example, they should try and up their used game sales, which is a system that had been put in place a while ago, but since late 2016, and now it's ramping up in 2017, the circle of life numbers is apparently being put much more in front for their evaluations. And it's pushing some of the staff to basically say that you know, they come to Reddit, to a specific subreddit, to sort of give tips to each other to achieve their numbers and things like that. And some of the people are saying, well, if there's a new game that people want, you should probably tell them you don't have it, because if you up your sales of new games, then you're not going to meet your numbers for pre-owned. And I understand why the company would do it, but because, you know, they make very little money on new games and a lot of money on pre-owned. But this seems like the most misguided, losing your, you know, the sight of your goal as a company and your primary, you know, business to try and chase numbers specifically, which ultimately is going to result in bad customer experience, which is going to result in bad results for your company. I don't understand. Maybe I'm not seeing the full picture here, but it seems like a weird way to go about it.
Yeah. I mean, I get the feeling that they're not like the most friendly company anyway. Yeah.
And maybe that's what's needed in that environment, because at least in France, they have Micromania, which is the equivalent of GameStop. They're owned by GameStop. And they're the only ones left standing, you know?
Yeah.
There were a number of chains in different countries, I'm sure. In France at least, and they all went under. So I don't know. Maybe that's what's needed. Maybe you leave the thin margin sales of new games and new consoles, on which they make basically nothing, to Amazon and whoever people go to buy those games cheaper, and you sell your customers pre-owned games more than other retail outlets do, to be able to keep your bottom line on the right side of the, you know, the color, not fall in the red. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, we have game here, which is basically our only option. And they've started diversifying the things, the way they make money as well, because like you say, I don't think new games make that much money. So they've now got, they started charging for VR. Like you would go into the store and you would try it out for 15 minutes or like half an hour, and they would charge you like £15 for that, which is like a bit dodgy, but I guess they know that people aren't coming to try out VR because they want to buy it. They're coming to try it because they probably won't buy it, right? And it's the only way they're gonna get to try it out. And they've now opened a shop in London, and I think they've got a few other locations. It's basically like, it's like an arcade, like a modern arcade. So you go in and you pay an amount of money, and then you can go and play like Rocket League for an hour or whatever. Which is interesting.
So they basically have an arcade with console games.
Yes. And I think there's VR there as well, and it's all like multiplayer stuff as well. So, yeah.
That's an interesting approach, actually, dedicating a small space somewhere to people coming in and try. I wonder what game developers will have to say about this, what the industry will have to say, because for renting, for the movie industry, if you want to rent a DVD, you have to pay a special license for the rental DVD, which is different from the retail DVD that you want to buy.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure the industry is not going to be very happy with game using retail copies to, or maybe they have agreements with the publishers. I doubt they do, though.
I think they've got something with Sony. I can't remember exactly what it was, but some kind of agreement or deal or whatever. That maybe Sony's like sponsoring it for a short time, and then once that's over, they'll do something else. I don't know.
Right. Would you go and like start trying out some games in a simile arcade store with something like that?
I don't think so, but that's probably for different reasons. I don't know. I can't imagine that I could get a band of friends together and convince them that we should go to Oxford Circus, which is incredibly busy and loud and stressful, and play video games. It's like, that's not really the environment I enjoy playing video games in. So yeah, I'd rather just go to someone's house and play whatever they have.
Right. Makes sense.
Yeah.
I could see this as a way of trying games you don't necessarily want to buy, though. That could be interesting. And if you're younger, you want to go to an arcade, that could maybe work. Maybe. I mean, I used to work in a retail store, and we would have like a group of kids, maybe five or six regulars, who would come in and play games all day, you know, for free, and just stay there and play. And that was their thing. They would come after school or whatever and come and play. And I could see this being a draw for kids like this, if it's not too expensive, or maybe.
I can't remember the pricing. I think it's probably affordable.
Yeah. Right. So maybe it's kind of like, you know, the arcades have died, and there have been some, you know, game cafes here and there where you go in, and in Korea, they're super popular. But even in Japan, arcades aren't that popular anymore. I don't know. I think it's just a nostalgic thing for me. I would love for it to still exist, but I don't know that it can. That's an interesting initiative, though, by Game.
Yeah.
All right, a few more tidbits. Sony has sold more consoles last fall than in any quarter in PlayStation history, is the exact headline by Polygon. So if you were wondering how good the PlayStation 4 is doing, well, pretty good. Related to the PlayStation 4, the 4.5 update for the system is going to add a couple of things. First of all, support for external hard drive, which that's something a lot of people have been pining for, although changing our hard drive in the PS4 is relatively easy, so that's not as needed as maybe in some other systems. But it also is going to add the boost mode, where the PlayStation Pro is going to get older games maybe to run a little bit faster and to load a little bit faster. So it's the older games are going to have higher frame rates and stuff like that, even if they haven't been updated to take advantage of the power of the PS4, the PS4 Pro. So that might be good for the three of you that have a PS4 Pro in there.
Yeah, a lot of my friends seem to have a PS4 Pro.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, they're all games journalists.
Oh, well, there you go. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't even have a 4K TV. So it would be a waste for me, but yeah.
I think unless you do, there's really no reason. I mean, yes, you can always justify it to yourself, but it seems like this is the main thing is 4K. If you have a 4K TV, then maybe. If you don't, maybe not. But this year, a lot of people are going to be getting 4K TVs. So at that point, maybe. Do we want to talk about Heroes of the Dorm dropping ESPN for Facebook? That's an interesting one. Facebook has been pushing in video for a while now, and they really want to become a destination for live video, and they are going to be putting out an app on the Apple TV for live video, and I'm guessing it's going to come out on other devices as well. So I feel like this is more a story about Facebook than it is about Heroes. But still, Facebook is pushing to become a destination for live video and for live gaming events in the future. I don't know how much they can compete with Twitch. Certainly, YouTube doesn't seem to have managed to compete with Twitch in any significant manner. Can Facebook do it? Maybe.
I think, interestingly, the thing with Facebook Live is that it's catering to an audience that's already there. Twitch is very much people who are looking for that, right? It's people who are going to Twitch already. Like, Facebook has an older audience, I would say. So, for example, I do some streams for The Guardian, which is, you know, it's got this huge Facebook following just because people are like, newspaper, news.
Right.
So it tends to skew older. But we stream things about video games there. So we're getting this audience that would maybe not have been looking for that, but they're already there. And once they're already there, they just tune in because they don't really maybe understand what's going on. They're like, oh, what's this? I do that sometimes when I see things like videos on Facebook. I'm like, oh, it moves.
Yeah. What's this? Me too. Of course. I agree.
Yeah.
So what's the reception when you stream? That's exactly, I think, the case, the good case study for that. What's the reception when the Guardian's audience is confronted with video game streams? What do they do say?
So because, like I mentioned, it tends to skew older, we get questions that are very different to the kind of questions you get on Twitch. When you're on Twitch, people are like, oh, what graphics card do you have? And things like that. Right. Or like, oh, what's your current weapon loadout? It's people who are used to game vocabulary. Whereas with The Guardian and with Facebook, you get people going, would my grandson like this game? And, oh, what game are you playing? Who are you? which you get who are you on Twitch as well. So that's nothing new because people are very angry when they don't instantly recognize who you are. it tends to be sort of people who aren't angry all the time.
That's probably
I get that
good.
A lot on Twitch. Yeah. Or maybe they're angry about other things. Yeah. But they're not mad because we're playing it wrong or whatever.
Are they mad because you're playing video games and they don't understand why this is on the Guardian's page?
Yeah, we get a lot of that. Luckily, it's filtered. We have, I guess you could call them mods, people who are reading the comments and filtering those so that we only get the good questions.
That's good.
Whereas when I'm on Twitch, I'm having to do that myself and I'm just reading all these people being horrible and I'm like, okay, which one of those should I actually read out? Whereas on Facebook, and because we have mods, it's happening, but we don't get to see it. Like, I could go and watch the video back and read them all myself, but I'm not going to.
But you could do that theoretically on Twitch as well. It's just that you have more people, I'm guessing, because you have the Guardian's team on the Facebook page. But that, you know, there are a couple of things there. First of all, in case it wasn't clear, the Facebook deal is exclusive from what I understand. So Heroes of the Dorm is going to be available only on Facebook this year. And the other thing is, it's kind of, there is a relatable aspect to Heroes of the Dorm already for people who aren't into video games. If you haven't been following this in the past, it's a tournament where different college kids from different colleges, like college teams, compete to win a prize, which is going to be their tuition, which would be paid by Blizzard. So there is the college aspect of it and the college competition and the very human aspect of it, which is can be a little bit more appealing to a less video game savvy audience than a standard gaming competition where it's just a competition with teams, you know, whatever, Dignitas, Envy Us, and these teams, which mean nothing to a wider audience. Whereas, you know, for Heroes of the Dorm, you're going to have like the University of Utah and the University of another state in the US, which people in the US are going to relate to. You know, there's all of this, which I think makes it maybe a better fit for a Facebook audience than some other gaming competitions. And that's what also made it a better fit for ESPN than maybe some other gaming competitions, which also are on ESPN sometimes. But I think it might make sense in the end. And if Facebook is accessible, easily accessible in many different places, if you don't necessarily need a Facebook account, because some people hate that, as I've heard on some shows I might or might not have listened to about Heroes of the Storm. But if you don't, you know, you just can go to a URL like facebook.com/heroesofthestorm and you see that stream, then it's fine. You don't care. You launch the app, you watch it. You don't need the account, or you go through the webpage. That's, I think, not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah.
All right. Last item is the game releases for this month. We've already talked about Fire Emblem Heroes. Nioh is releasing tomorrow. That's very Japanese, very Dark Souls-y. For Honor is releasing on the 14th. Halo Wars on the 21st. Horizon Zero Dawn on the 28th. And that's about it. There's Torment, Tides of Numenera, which I'm not necessarily going to talk about too much, but anything that catches your eye in all of these?
No.
Nothing? Not even Horizon? I was sure you were going to say Horizon.
It's one of those games that I'll maybe pick up later. I don't think it's something that I'm particularly worried about playing when everyone else is playing it. I'll see what people say about it. People have been saying good things so far. But I'm about to go away for like a month, so it doesn't really make sense to pick up any new games right now. Which is kind of boring. That's a boring answer. I'm sorry.
It's fine. I do have concerns about that game, though. Not for anything I've seen, but I think actually for the fact that I haven't seen a lot. And maybe I'm putting too much thought into this, but it seems to me like for a big game like this, if Sony was confident that it was a big release that could be very successful, they would push it more from a marketing standpoint. And it feels like we're not seeing a lot of it. Now, we still have, you know, it's only a couple of weeks away for the release. And maybe things are going to start happening now, but it doesn't look like it. And when a company they're not shoveling it under the rug, but when a company isn't really pushing the game too much, it doesn't smell right to me. Mm-hmm. Especially for this game, which has been the, you know, sort of a planting their flags at E3 2 years in a row, or, you know. So I don't know. I'm getting a little bit nervous about the game. But
I'm nervous about every game at the moment.
There isn't something that you're super excited about?
I want to say Zelda, but I don't know. I'm worried about it.
Well, I'm worried about it too, but
I see what they're trying to do with it, but I'm not sure if I agree.
I know. Given your initial ramblings at the beginning of the show, I'm going to say Persona 5.
Persona 5. Means I'm going to have to like dig out my consoles. God, I haven't played anything on console in a while.
Oh, that will be a chance. Persona 5 is coming out in what? April? PS4. There you go.
Yeah.
Yay.
If I still have games. A PS4.
Oh, what?
Well, I probably will. I probably will. But like, I don't know. No, I'll keep my PS4.
Well, at least until you're done with Persona 5, right?
Yeah. I don't know if I'll still have my Wii U.
That you can...
I'll probably put it in storage or something. That's fine.
Especially if you have a Switch. Especially if you have a Switch, yeah. I have to say, I'm... to finish where we started, I'm still not convinced that the Switch is going to be a great console, but now that I have pre-ordered it for work, it's always exciting to see a new console coming out. So I'm sort of excited to try the new console. But I think that might be more of the excitement of just it's a new console and it's Nintendo than the actual qualities of the thing. But still, I'm a little bit like, ooh, it's a month away. There's a new console coming out. So
It's real soon.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is going to be it for us. Before we leave, though, Kate, can you tell people where they can find you on the internet if they want more Kate Gray after this show?
Yes. The easiest place to find me is on Twitter, where I'm at How Not to Draw. I tend to be at How Not to Draw on everything else. So like Instagram, Mastodon, if you're into that.
What is that?
Yeah. Mastodon's like a Twitter, but nicer.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know a lot of social networks, but I've never heard of that one. I'm going to go check it out.
You should check it out. It's nice. Okay. It's still being like tweaked, so it's like using Twitter in the early days.
Okay.
But it's really nice there. Everyone's friendlier generally.
Nice.
What else do I have? You can listen to my podcast, which is Toku Podcast. You can search for that on Twitter and it should come up. There's a lot of Toku podcasts because it turns out it's a Japanese thing. It's like a type of TV show or something. We didn't research the name before we called it that, but you can tell which one we are because our logo is pink and the rest aren't. So, yeah. I think that's everything. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. My logos are pink as well, pinkish. So I approve. All right. Well, thank you very much, Kate. I am Not Patrick on Twitter and on Facebook. And you can find this show at FrenchSpin.com. If you wish to support us, you can go leave a comment or a review on iTunes or any other podcast catalog you frequent. And we will see you in another couple of weeks, I guess. Thanks for listening and talk to you then. Bye.
Bye.